Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On August 27, 2006, 2-year-old Trenton Duckett was tucked safely into bed at his home in Leesburg, Florida. But when his mother, Melinda Duckett, went to check in on him, she said that she found an open window, a sliced screen, and an empty bed. She immediately called 911, launching a frantic search for the missing toddler. But as investigators dug deeper, Melinda's story began to fall apart. And in its place were layers of deception, bitter custody disputes, and a mystery that remains unsolved to this day. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Trenton Duckett. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This episode is another listener suggestion, and it wasn't a story I was super familiar with. But as I started looking into it, it is actually a case I've heard of, but unfortunately, not necessarily because of Trenton.
Okay.
So the reason that this case really started to gain national attention was because of what happened between his mother, Melinda, and Nancy Grace.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So before we dive into all of that, we'd like to thank our newest Patreon supporters, April C., Cheryl T., Callie C., Catherine M., and Sarah R. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you all so much.
And remember, if you join us over on Patreon, starting at just $2 a month, you'll receive these episodes ad-free, along with a copy of the ebook that I wrote. So with that all out of the way, let's get into the story of Trenton Duckett. Trenton Duckett was born on August 10th, 2004 in Leesburg, Florida. His parents, Melinda and Joshua Duckett, were young. And from what it seems like, Trenton was the result of an accidental pregnancy. The timeline of their relationship is very muddy and very confusing. I'm not sure that they were even officially together when Melinda got pregnant. So it's not super surprising that their relationship ended up being rather tumultuous. Basically, all of this started their senior year of high school, and Trenton was born right after that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see how that's not a good recipe for a relationship.
Right. Melinda Duckett was born in South Korea and was adopted by Jerry and Beth Eubank when she was just 4 months old. She grew up in Lockport, New York, and had what appeared to outsiders as a typical American childhood. But beneath the surface, Melinda struggled deeply with issues surrounding her adoption. She grappled with abandonment fears and identity issues, which are common struggles among international adoptees. As Melinda entered adolescence, these emotional battles became tougher to deal with, and they led to behavioral problems and difficulty in school. She often talked about how she felt disconnected from her family despite their attempts to support her emotionally. In her late teens, Melinda decided she wanted a fresh start, so she moved from New York in with her grandparents in Florida. However, her new surroundings ultimately couldn't fix the internal struggles. Josh Duckett is a native Floridian. He's been described as outgoing and warm and as someone who easily made friends and connections. Josh had a relatively stable upbringing and he was very close with his family and still is, as far as I know. Now, so I mentioned that this was kind of a high school thing when it started. So Josh and Melinda met when they were both attending South Sumter High School. And again, they may have been dating, but it doesn't seem like they're in a super serious relationship before Melinda got pregnant. But they tried to form a family once Trenton was born in 2004 after graduation. the young family struggled financially and emotionally.
When did they get married?
Oh, I'm getting to that. That's the confusing part.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Their whole relationship timeline is very weird. So shortly after their son was born in 2004, the couple's relationship entered a volatile phase. Their arguments intensified and often became loud and heated, which caused concern among their friends and family, especially because, you know, there was a tiny baby right there. In April 2005, so this is before Trenton is a year old, Josh had Melinda involuntarily committed under the Baker Act.
Okay.
Because he claimed that she had threatened to harm Trenton. But despite all of this, the pair married 3 months later in July 2005, right before Trenton's first birthday.
Okay.
I didn't want to get too into the weeds of all the court filings, but they went back and forth a lot. And Josh made a lot of claims against Melinda that he later recanted. Melinda made a lot of claims against Josh that she later recanted. So it's really hard to get a good sense of what was actually happening beyond just general dysfunction. The marriage, if you couldn't guess, was short-lived. The young couple's marital difficulties grew so severe that police were even called a few times. Within a few months, their relationship completely broke down and Josh and Melinda separated. Along with the separation came a bitter custody battle. Josh was extremely vocal about his belief that Melinda was emotionally unstable and unfit to parent Trenton safely.
Well, I mean, if what he alleged that caused her to be committed is true, then yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you know, you can see that.
Oh, absolutely. And he expressed concern about his son's well-being because of Melinda's erratic behavior. Josh's family backed him up and echoed those concerns and also said that they were worried about Trenton being in Melinda's care. For her part, Melinda accused Josh of being abusive and manipulative. And like I said, the increasingly contentious atmosphere is documented in court records. But all of the accusations and instability ultimately created a toxic environment that profoundly impacted Trenton, who was caught in the middle. So during this whole time, he was shuffled between each of his parents, their family, like he was staying with her grandparents sometimes, his parents, you know, Josh's parents sometimes. I think for a brief period, Trenton was even in foster care. It was just a lot for a little boy to deal with. At a very formative time for him, too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to go spend weekends or nights at grandparents or whatever, but it's another thing when it removes the stability of having, you know, a home base to go back to. And if you don't have that, I mean, obviously, especially at that early age, I mean, that's prime for forming primary physical connections and emotional bonds.
Yeah, exactly. So it really seems like regardless of like what the truth was in terms of who was doing what or whatever, it absolutely was a bad time for poor little Trenton. And throughout this period, Melinda's mental health continued to be an essential concern. Friends and family reported her exhibiting signs of severe depression, paranoia, and anxiety. Melinda frequently isolated herself and was withdrawn and secretive about her daily life. She reportedly also began cutting off relationships with longtime friends, which is a definite red flag. In December 2005, Melinda was diagnosed with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, but the report did state that there was, quote, no psychological reason that would preclude Melinda from being a capable and loving parent, end quote.
I've never heard of obsessive compulsive personality disorder. I've heard of OCD and personality disorder. I've never,
or like borderline personality disorder. Yeah.
I've never heard them combined. Yeah. I mean, like, what does that entail?
I don't know. But I mean, it's OCPD is what it's called. And I think it is kind of just a combination of those two.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
It is. But like I said, the psychological report did state that it shouldn't prevent her from being a capable and loving parent. So the back and forth and the fights continued into 2006. So that report was December 2005. And then in July of that year, Melinda finally filed for divorce. She also, at that time, received a protective order against Josh. So again, like I said, there are accusations just flying on both sides.
And at this point, this is right before Trenton turns
Two.
Mm-hmm.
So once she was out of the marriage, Melinda's life continued to spiral. She lost her job and was forced to collect welfare. In an effort to make money, she started selling X-rated photos and videos of herself on the internet. Now, this is before OnlyFans, of course, but that's the type of stuff she was doing. Trenton, though, can be heard crying in the background of at least one of the videos.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And apparently in one of the photos, you can see like the top of his head in his crib. During this time, the custody battle was intensifying, and Melinda talked about how she was afraid that she was going to lose Trenton permanently. Then came August 27th, 2006. Hey, it's Kona, and April is Earth Month. Did you know that most mattresses end up in landfills within a decade? That's why quality is sustainability. Avocado Green mattresses are built to last. They're crafted with non-toxic, certified organic materials and made in their own zero-waste factory. They've already diverted 85% of waste from landfills, and they're working toward even more. And as a 1% Planet member, Avocado donates at least 1% of all revenue to environmental nonprofits tackling climate change, restoring ecosystems, and protecting our planet. That means every time you choose Avocado, you're directly supporting organizations making a real impact. A better night's sleep and a better planet? That's a win-win. You can even have a sleep trial up to 1 year and generous warranties for your peace of mind. So head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better for you and the planet. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredient as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Hey everyone, it's Kona. Remember when I told you about True Diagnostics' True Age Test? Well, I've got more details about this cutting-edge way to measure your biological age, so let's dig a little deeper into what you can actually learn with this test. True Age analyzes hundreds of thousands of markers on your DNA to reveal your true biological age and how fast you're aging compared to normal. By the way, 90% of aging is actually driven by lifestyle and environment, not just genetics, which means that knowing this info gives you the power to improve. In addition to your true biological age, TrueAge tells you how fast 11 key organ systems are aging, including your heart, brain, lungs, liver, and more. I feel pretty good about my cardiovascular health, for instance, but I'm really curious to see how my brain is holding up at this point. You'll also get a breakdown of 75 plus key longevity biomarkers, which are things like metabolic health, immune response, and even risk factors for certain conditions. And what I love is that, along with your results, you'll receive personalized recommendations to help you improve those numbers and even potentially reverse your biological age over time. So if you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order. This is your chance to take control of your aging and make every year count more for your health. Visit truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. By all accounts, August 27th began as a relatively normal day for Melinda. She was living in an apartment at the Windermere Villas complex in Leesburg, Florida. At the time, Melinda had primary custody of Trenton, and though Josh was actively fighting for more visitation rights, his access had been limited due to the ongoing court proceedings, namely that protective order. That Sunday, Melinda reportedly spent the day running errands and taking care of tasks around the apartment. However, her timeline for that day would later come under heavy scrutiny, and rightly so, because it was inconsistent and in parts unverifiable. According to Melinda, she and Trenton spent the majority of the afternoon at home, but surveillance footage from several local stores later showed that she had been out driving between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. Investigators noted that in some of that footage, Trenton was not visible in the car, so this raised red flags almost immediately. Now, around 4 p.m., Melinda was seen on camera entering a local Walgreens where she purchased some basic household items, and she was alone. Then, sometime between 5 and 6 p.m., she visited her grandparents' home in nearby the Villages, bringing Trenton with her, or so she claimed. There was no independent confirmation that Trenton was actually present at that visit, and her grandparents didn't definitively confirm seeing him that day. The visit reportedly didn't last long. Yeah. Then, around 6:30 p.m., Melinda returned to her apartment. Now, a neighbor reported briefly seeing her and thought that she looked unusually tense. The neighbor did not see Trenton. Melinda told police that she fed Trenton dinner, bathed him, and put him to bed in the corner of her bedroom. So he had like a little toddler bed set
up. Okay.
And she said that she did this between 7 and 7:30 p.m. She said that he went down without a fuss. And from that point on, she claimed that she was in the living room watching a movie with friends. So we know she had at least two friends over that night, and they apparently watched Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And according to Melinda, at 9 p.m., she went to check on Trenton. But when she opened the door to her bedroom, she said she found something horrifying. The window was open, the screen had been sliced, and Trenton's crib was empty.
And she said that that was at 9 p.m.?
Yes.
Her timeline aside, when was the last time that it was verified by somebody else that they saw Trenton?
Yeah, so that's the thing. From what I, and we're going to talk about one specific sighting a little bit later, but it does appear that he was out with her on that day.
On the 27th.
For at least part of the day.
But not.
But not prior
to 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Let's say around then, because we haven't officially verified that she took him to her grandparents' house that evening.
Right.
And, you know, the neighbors said that she didn't see Trenton at six when she got home. But it is a situation which he was seen that day, not a situation that we've seen in other cases where the kids hadn't been seen in the days or even weeks leading prior. Up to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were no signs of forced entry elsewhere in the apartment. And obviously, you know, Melinda said that she and her friends were in the living room the whole time watching a movie.
Now, has that been verified that her friends were actually there?
Yes, because actually one of them is the one who called 911.
Okay.
911 was called at 903, and it was actually one of the male friends who called 911. So he started the 911 call and he's like, "Hey, I'm at Melinda Duckett's apartment. She says that her son was abducted." And then he calls her over. He calls for her like three times. And then Melinda is all frantic and she gets on the phone with the 911 operator. Now, this guy, I'm not even going to get into his name because it truly doesn't matter. He was later interviewed by police. His story checked out. Everything was fine. The other guy, whose name was never released, also checked out by police. You know, his story, everything seems to have been fine. But because Melinda put Trenton to bed before they came over, they never saw him. So after this 911 call, police, of course, immediately responded because it's a 2-year-old being abducted from his bedroom.
Right.
And when Leesburg police arrived at the scene, they began searching the apartment. The window screen had indeed been sliced and the window was slightly ajar. However, there was no evidence of disturbance either inside or immediately outside the window. There were no muddy footprints, no disturbed mulch or grass, nothing. They also said that, you know, the window was just only slightly open, so it wasn't open enough for anybody to get in or out of.
I was also going to ask, like, how large the quote-unquote slice.
Yeah, I don't think the slit was enough for an adult to get through either.
Or for them to reach in and grab the baby.
So because it was a toddler bed, the toddler bed was really low to the ground,
yeah,
and the window was a little bit higher. So like there's no way that you could reach in and grab him. Like mm-hmm. you would have had to physically come in the room,
yeah,
get him and then physically take him out.
Gotcha.
Detectives tested for fingerprints on the window frame and surrounding areas, but found nothing useful. Forensics teams dusted the apartment and collected items for analysis, though nothing linked to a third party was discovered.
I would be curious if they got so into it that they could tell which way the strands of the screen
mm-hmm.
Were bent.
Yeah. So later police did say that the screen appeared to have been cut from the inside.
There we go. That's mm-hmm. where I was getting.
Yep. So officers conducted an immediate sweep of the area, calling in backup and initiating a localized search. Neighbors were questioned, but no one had seen or heard anything unusual that evening. Within an hour, Trenton Duckett was classified as a missing child. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement was contacted, and by midnight, a regional BOLO had been issued. As the night wore on, law enforcement began mobilizing more resources, including canine units, helicopters equipped with infrared, and boats to search nearby bodies of water. But despite the rapid mobilization, there were no immediate clues. There was no scent trail, no witnesses, and most alarmingly, no sign that Trenton had ever left the apartment that night.
Well, it's not surprising that there wouldn't be a scent trail. He's too, if he was abducted by anybody,
yeah,
he would have been carried. So he wouldn't have necessarily left a scent for canines to follow.
Yeah, I don't think you have to necessarily be on the ground, though, like walking in order for the canines to catch your scent.
Mm.
I don't know. But either way,
I don't know.
They didn't
I'm
get
not
anything.
A canine officer. I don't know yeah, the exactly. science behind it. But it seems to me that they would have to. But I don't know.
I don't know.
Regardless, there was no other evidence that.
None at all. Like not a single footprint, you know, nothing.
Right.
The next morning, law enforcement returned to the apartment complex and conducted a more detailed daylight search. That's when they brought in the bloodhounds and cadaver dogs. Now, these dogs were used to track scents leading away from the apartment, but they failed to come up with a consistent trail. Police expanded the radius and began interviewing more neighbors. Flyers were printed and handed out throughout Leesburg. Local media picked up the story, and Trenton's face began appearing on television and social media across the region. Meanwhile, detectives were beginning to doubt Melinda's version of events. They couldn't verify several aspects of her timeline, including Trenton's whereabouts between the early afternoon and the evening. So, just what you were saying. No one could definitively say when Trenton had last been seen, except for Melinda. Over the next few days, this lack of confirmation would become one of the most troubling elements of the entire case. Now, although Melinda's story already wasn't adding up, police had to look closely at both parents.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, especially with a contentious custody battle. Like, right. Come on. Josh was questioned extensively, but was able to provide a clear and verifiable alibi. He wasn't in the Leesburg area at the time of Trenton's disappearance, and he had several witnesses who could vouch for his whereabouts. He cooperated fully with law enforcement and even participated in multiple searches for his son and, you know, did a bunch of media appearances. Melinda, though, was a bit of a different story. In the days following Trenton's disappearance, Melinda gave inconsistent statements to police and the media. Initially, she insisted that Trenton was abducted through the bedroom window. But when she was asked to account for her full timeline of the day, her story shifted. She couldn't recall certain times, and she became evasive when she was asked where she had driven that afternoon and whether Trenton had been with her the entire time. Additionally, Melinda refused to take a polygraph test, which doesn't mean you're guilty. Again, never take a polygraph test. She did, however, agree to undergo a voice stress analysis, which is like even faker than polygraphs.
What the hell does that mean?
No, it's like not widely used, but some jurisdictions will still use it. It showed she was being deceptive.
I mean,
but
to prove what? That you're under stress? I mean,
I'm sure you're under fucking stress.
If you believe her story, she just lost her fucking child. So yes, she's under stress.
I know.
That's the dumbest non-science thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yes. So I don't put a ton of credence into that result.
It's the same as saying, oh, it's the same hair.
Yeah.
Like, that's not science. You look out under a microscope and a brown hair looks like a brown hair.
Mm-hmm. So after she took that test, though, she lawyered up and became increasingly reluctant to participate in interviews with law enforcement, which, again, honestly,
I don't blame her.
She should.
Yeah.
Like, innocent or guilty, like, don't talk to the cops.
Well, especially if they're doing shit like that.
Well, yeah. And they're obviously trying, like, they obviously are looking at her as a suspect. Like, there's nothing that you can do at that point to help yourself unless you have yourself, like,
unless you have a rock solid alibi, and then they'll leave you alone. But if you're even slightly suspicious and you're so close to the case, they're going to look at you and they're going to press you. So, yeah, I'm 100% okay with her lawyering up.
But during the course of the investigation, things continued to not look great for her. So it was also discovered that Melinda had hosted a yard sale just a few days before Trenton disappeared. According to neighbors, she sold many of Trenton's toys, clothes, and even furniture. When she was asked why she was getting rid of so many of her son's things, she gave vague answers. Some said she claimed they were moving. Others said she told people Trenton didn't need them anymore.
Okay. The inconsistent answers, that is troublesome. I'm not defending her, but, like, you know, a lot of people, when they have kids, they do get rid of a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
Quickly.
And that's the thing. Like, you can't look at that on its face and say that's 100% suspicious because he had just turned two. So
what furniture was it? Was it a changing table? Because a 2-year-old probably doesn't need that.
Yeah.
Was it a crib? Because
he was in a toddler bed.
Doesn't need the crib. Like, there's a lot of stuff that,
like, how big
babies
were the clothes
need
that she was selling? You
there's
know?
A lot of stuff that babies need that they immediately don't need post 1 year, 1 year and 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, like, a lot of stuff turns over very quickly in the first couple of years that they're alive.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing. So unless, like, you're telling me that she's giving away, like, 2T clothes, 3T clothes, like
the toddler bed he was sleeping in.
Right. Or, like, you know, a present he had just gotten for his birthday. Like,
right.
You know, unless you're telling me that, I also can't say, yes, that's absolutely suspicious that she
not
did this.
Not defending her, just
no,
saying
I mean,
that
could,
that is not
listen,
suspicious on its face value.
It could be 100% suspicious, but, like, without knowing the details, I'm not going to make a determination, you know? In the hours after the 911 call, other witnesses came forward saying that they had seen Melinda tossing large black trash bags into various dumpsters around town. Now, police attempted to locate and retrieve those bags, but by the time they conducted their search, most of the garbage had already been collected and transported to local landfills. However, inside one dumpster near her apartment were some more of Trenton's belongings and photographs. Police did later search the local landfill, but they didn't really find anything. So to me, finding some of his stuff in the dumpster is a little bit more suspicious than the yard
Especially
sale.
Photos.
But yeah, exactly. Investigators subpoenaed Melinda's phone records and computer. They found online searches for topics related to custody law and child abduction cases. Some of these searches were concerning in their detail, but none were directly incriminating. And again, like, you can explain this away, too. Like, obviously, she's going to be searching custody law. Like,
well, sure. She's involved in it.
Yeah. And even child abduction cases, you can say she was researching that because she was afraid that Josh was going to take Trenton from her.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. It's a little bit more suspicious than...
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Just
but I'm
researching
just saying, like,
child custody.
None of this, to me, is like 100%.
No. But you add up little thing after little thing after little thing.
And there are a lot more little things.
And then it starts to all become suspicious.
Exactly. Her cell phone records also revealed movements inconsistent with her original timeline, including pings from areas she initially failed to mention, which, of course, does not look good. With national attention growing and local leads drying up, the FBI joined the investigation. They focused not just on potential foul play, but also on the theory that Melinda may have handed Trenton off to somebody in her network, possibly to keep him away from Josh. They looked into friends, family members, and online contacts, including some distant acquaintances in other states and abroad. But despite their investigation, the FBI found no indication that Trenton had been transported out of the area. No airline tickets were purchased in Melinda's name, no border crossings were flagged, and there were no witnesses placing her with Trenton outside of Lake County that weekend. After an intense first month, the investigation began to stall. Hundreds of leads had been followed. Volunteers had distributed flyers in multiple states. Law enforcement had combed through woods, lakes, and highways, but no solid evidence had emerged to indicate what happened to Trenton Duckett. The one person who might have had those answers, Melinda, was growing more distant and unwilling to cooperate. Detectives were increasingly convinced that she knew more than she was telling, though. What they didn't realize is just how little time they had left to get answers. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that are delivered discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off with your first order at mood.com with promo code ATTWG. They have so many different types of gummies. It's absolutely wild. Their sleepy time gummies will knock you out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers and no grogginess. You will wake up feeling amazing. They even have gummies for pain relief. And I have some that I'm going to give to a relative who has hip problems but can't take ibuprofen for other health reasons. And their Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything: immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. I want to stress this.
one more time. This is federally legal. There are no pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. From the moment Trenton Duckett was reported missing, the media played a significant role in shaping public perception of the case. Local news stations covered the initial 911 call, the scene at Melinda's apartment, and the subsequent police search. As days passed without any credible leads, the story gained traction nationally. And so it wasn't long before major media outlets, including CNN, took interest. While Melinda by this time had kind of stopped talking to law enforcement, she started speaking more frequently to reporters, particularly those who seemed sympathetic. Initially, she portrayed herself as a frantic, heartbroken mother and begged for her son's return. But then, on September 8th, 2006, less than 2 weeks after Trenton disappeared, Melinda went on Nancy Grace, and that was a mistake. Melinda had agreed to the interview, hoping to raise awareness for Trenton's disappearance, but Nancy Grace isn't going to do a puff piece. From the beginning of the interview, Nancy pressed Melinda hard on her inconsistencies. She questioned Melinda's unwillingness to take a polygraph. She asked why Melinda wouldn't provide her full timeline. And when Melinda offered vague or evasive responses, Grace pushed back with increasing intensity, accusing her, without explicitly saying so, of knowing more than she was letting on. Melinda appeared visibly shaken during the interview. Her demeanor alternated between defensive and detached. Viewers later described her as emotionless, cold, or confused. Grace asked her directly why she wasn't out searching for her son, and Melinda, who was like super flustered, tried to explain, but she stumbled over her words and didn't really give a satisfying answer.
Okay, all of this, I'm sure, was very entertaining TV. However, once again, it does not prove anything, especially when you're dealing with somebody that has OCD.
OCPD,
OCPD, yeah. Which if you're combining borderline personality disorder and OCD, they're probably neurotic at best.
Yeah.
You know, like on a good day, they probably seem all over the place. So putting them in a stressful environment, like a television interview.
With Nancy Grace, who is like not an easy person to talk to.
Who's pressing you for answers. Mm-hmm. And like that's going to make them react very erratic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a stressful situation for sure. So that interview ended abruptly. And then less than 24 hours later, Melinda was dead. On September 9th, 2006, Melinda Duckett died by suicide at her grandparents' home in the Villages. She used her grandfather's shotgun to take her own life. Melinda left several suicide notes behind, including one that was addressed to the public. In it, she chastised the media without mentioning names and accused them of twisting her words and taking the focus off of Trenton. She also said that she hoped they didn't push anyone else. What's important to know is that Melinda didn't leave a confession or any indication of where Trenton might be in any of these letters. But in a letter addressed to her grandparents, she did allude to Trenton still being alive, saying, quote, "The main reason I am doing this is because even after my baby is found, I would not be a good mother," end quote. Now, the timing of her death, obviously being the day after she appeared on Nancy Grace, was a huge story in and of itself.
Yeah.
Critics of Nancy Grace accused her of going too far and said that publicly shaming a mother in distress could have contributed to her suicide.
I mean, look, it definitely didn't help.
Nancy Grace, for her part, defended her interview. She later stated, quote, "If anything, I would suggest that the guilt made her commit suicide," end quote.
I mean, that's only if you believe 100% that she's guilty.
Well, exactly. And so some people do, and they agree that Melinda's suicide was tantamount to an admission of guilt. But many others believe that the media had unfairly targeted and demonized a mentally fragile young woman. Melinda's family ended up filing a wrongful death lawsuit against Nancy Grace and CNN, claiming that the interview caused Melinda's emotional collapse and subsequent suicide. The lawsuit argued that Melinda had been unfairly interrogated, misled about the nature of the interview, and pushed beyond her emotional limits. The case was eventually settled out of court in 2010. As part of the settlement, CNN contributed to a trust fund established to help search for Trenton. The amount wasn't disclosed, and Nancy Grace never issued a public apology. Now, Melinda's suicide, of course, amplified public interest in Trenton's case. Theories exploded on internet forums, Reddit threads, Facebook groups, and local message boards. Police never officially declared Melinda a suspect before her death, but did say publicly that she was the last person to see Trenton alive and that she had not been fully cooperative with the investigation. But of course, with Melinda gone, any answers about Trenton's final moments, if she even had them, were buried with her. So after Melinda died, police changed their tune. They said that Melinda had, in fact, been their prime suspect, and they had enough to arrest her 4 days after she had reported Trenton missing. However, they held off in hopes that she would lead them to the little boy. Now, law enforcement's official stance is that they do believe Trenton is dead, but there are still many out there who believe he could still be alive and that Melinda handed him off to someone. So remember earlier when I was talking about the surveillance videos that caught her at different stores?
Yeah.
Well, a cashier at a Wendy's drive-thru also came forward and said that Melinda came through with Trenton and ordered food that afternoon.
Afternoon, but what time? Because we only...
I know. So it's okay. Early. Just wait.
Okay.
Because
okay.
It doesn't actually matter exactly what time. Because so she said that she came through with Trenton. It was positive that was her. She was positive it was Trenton because they chatted and she asked what the baby's name was. Then the cashier says that Melinda came back through about 20 minutes later, but this time she was alone. Now, 20 minutes seems like an awfully short time to commit a murder and get rid of a body.
It's pretty quick if it's a prearranged meeting to hand off a baby, though.
Exactly. Despite exhaustive investigation and widespread media coverage, no definitive answers have emerged in Trenton Duckett's disappearance. And so now, nearly 2 decades later, what remains are theories. The first theory is that Trenton was murdered by Melinda. And this is the one that's most often cited by investigators and members of the public who believe that Melinda was involved. The idea is that Melinda, possibly in a moment of mental and emotional collapse, killed Trenton either intentionally or accidentally. And while it's circumstantial, there is evidence that points to this. Melinda selling Trenton's belongings days before he disappeared. The surveillance footage that showed her driving around town in the hours before her 911 call without Trenton visibly in the car. And, you know, the fact that she was seen dumping those trash bags in the evening. Plus, as we mentioned at the beginning, the window screen was appeared to have been cut from the inside. Then there was also her refusal to take a polygraph and, of course, her eventual suicide. Melinda could have harmed Trenton earlier in the day and staged the kidnapping to deflect suspicion. However, it's important to note that no physical evidence, no body, no forensic evidence, no confession has ever confirmed this theory. The second most popular theory is that Melinda, terrified of losing custody to Josh, arranged to hide Trenton with someone she trusted, possibly even out of state or overseas. People who believe this theory talk about Melinda's strong resistance to letting Josh have custody and her statements to friends that she would never allow that to happen. Some suggest that she may have coordinated with someone from an adoption or parenting forum or even with someone she knew from her time online. Others have speculated that because she was born in South Korea and had shown interest in Korean culture, she may have made arrangements for Trenton to be taken overseas. Now, this theory is one that I actually put zero credence in because this all happened in 2006. Like, this is a post-9/11 world.
Right. No, nobody's getting a baby out of this country.
On an airplane. Without a lot of documentation.
Yes. And we know this because we, not baby wife.
Now you're because we've tried, which we have, but with our own kids.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's where I was going. Like, we have taken trips with our own children overseas, but because you have a child and I have a child and then we have a child together, it required a massive amount of documents from their other parents agreeing to the trip.
An in-person trip to the passport office.
Yes, to get the passport. Yeah. Like, yes, it is very difficult. Now, yes, can all of that be forged? Sure. But I would imagine that would be incredibly difficult.
Exactly. And this is like a 21-year-old woman. Like, she didn't have a lot of resources or, you know, anything like that. Plus, she was adopted out of South Korea as an infant.
Yeah, it's not like she has ties.
No, she has no connections.
Yeah.
She didn't know anybody over there. So, yeah, I don't think that happened at all. I'm not saying that she couldn't have handed him off to somebody.
Yeah.
I don't think she handed him off to anybody who then took him to South Korea.
Right. I mean, yes. Could she have researched all of this and found somebody that would have helped her with all of this? Yeah. But there would have been a forensic trail of that on her internet.
Exactly. And there wasn't.
Right.
But still, for people who believe Melinda didn't harm her son, it remains a hopeful explanation that Trenton is alive and living under a different identity and has been raised by someone who believes that they were protecting him. Though it's the scenario that Melinda initially reported, the one considered the least likely by law enforcement is that Trenton was abducted by a stranger. In my rankings, that's slightly more realistic than him being in South Korea.
Yeah, but the evidence doesn't point to that.
But no, it really doesn't. Because there was no evidence of forced entry beyond the staged-looking screen. No witnesses saw a stranger enter or exit the apartment complex, and no scent trail or physical trace was found that indicated that somebody had carried the toddler away that night. The time window for such a crime was also incredibly narrow. And, you know, there was also the logistics, right? Like, this abduction would have had to have been so clean and quiet in a crowded apartment complex, and not even like in the middle of the night. We're talking about before 9 p.m., because 9 p.m. is when she saw that he was missing. So sometime between 7 and 9, which that's when people are up. They're out. It's summer in Florida. Like,
right.
People are out and about doing things.
And it's still very much daylight.
Yeah, it's not dark.
Yeah.
So it's not impossible, but police and most experts believe that this theory was simply a smokescreen created by Melinda. There's also a hybrid theory, though, that Melinda had a mental health breakdown and doesn't remember what happened. Some experts have floated the possibility that Melinda entered a dissociative state, perhaps from stress, trauma, or mental illness, and either harmed Trenton or handed him off without fully understanding or remembering what she had done. It's a theory that attempts to reconcile her erratic behavior with the idea that she might not have been acting with full awareness. Dissociative episodes, while rare, can happen under intense emotional strain. And given Melinda's fragile emotional state, her history of depression, and signs of escalating instability, this theory actually holds some weight.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it. I'm not a mental health expert, but
yeah.
It does kind of make sense. But are we forming theories to fit what people want out of or are we following what the actual facts say?
Yeah, because you're right. There is no direct evidence or psychological evaluation records that would really back this up. So it truly is just a theory. Now, one of the early theories, of course, was that Josh was the one responsible for taking Trenton from Melinda. Because remember, Melinda had told multiple people that she was afraid that Josh would take Trenton away from her. So naturally, after Trenton's disappearance, some people question whether Josh had secretly taken him or arranged for somebody else to do so. Now, police did investigate Josh extensively. And as I mentioned earlier, he was given a polygraph test, which he reportedly passed. And his alibi for the time of Trenton's disappearance was solid and corroborated by multiple witnesses. And there has just never been any direct evidence that linked him to this at all. So over time, this theory has kind of lost traction, especially in light of Josh's continued public advocacy for Trenton and his full cooperation with law enforcement. Over the years, Josh has remained one of Trenton's most vocal advocates. On the anniversary of his son's disappearance each year, He posts messages and speaks to the media, reiterating that the search will never stop until Trenton is found or definitive answers are discovered. Josh later remarried and had additional children, but in interviews, he's spoken candidly about the emotional toll that Trenton's disappearance has had on him. The guilt, the sleepless nights, and the feeling that he lost a part of himself the day his firstborn son disappeared. The Leesburg Police Department has never officially closed Trenton's case. Though leads have slowed over time, the case is still classified as open and active. Investigators occasionally re-examine the case file and have said publicly that they remain committed to finding answers. In 2018, on the 12th anniversary of Trenton's disappearance, Leesburg police issued a new plea to the public, urging anyone with even the smallest piece of information to come forward, saying, quote, "We don't believe this case is unsolvable. We believe someone knows something." Even after nearly two decades, Trenton's case is regularly reviewed during internal cold case assessments. Advances in technology, such as improved facial recognition software and data tracking tools, could offer new hope, but none of it's yielded a result as of now. So I don't know. I mean, honestly, I can't say what happened to Trenton. I do believe Melinda did something to him.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I don't know what. I don't think she murdered him.
You don't?
No.
How come?
I just think that there would have been some more evidence of that.
Yeah. It does seem unlikely that given how erratic her behavior was, that she would have been able to cover it up so completely.
Right. If she had murdered him, it probably would have been either in her apartment or in her car. Or
right.
Not, you know, like.
And they had cadaver dogs.
Yeah.
You know?
And again, her erratic behavior. I don't think that she would have been able to clean everything up so well that nothing would have been noticed.
Yeah.
So I don't think she murdered him. I do think something happened. Mm-hmm. I don't know what, though.
Yeah.
I 100% do not think that Josh had anything to do with it. Because, yes, obviously, he physically didn't take him. That's corroborated by his alibi. But you're talking about close to 20 years.
Yeah.
And nobody has seen Trenton?
Right, because the idea isn't for Josh to take Trenton and then also never see him again.
Right.
The idea would have been like a parental abduction.
Yes.
You know, that he takes Trenton and takes off.
Right, which he didn't.
Right.
He didn't take off.
Yeah.
And he's still putting himself out there in the media spotlight to this day.
Mm-hmm.
So zero chance that he has him.
Yeah, I also don't believe he has them. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I do tend to agree that maybe Melinda did hand him off to somebody.
Maybe.
I don't know what happened after that.
I don't know.
You know, who she would have handed him off to, what that person's intentions were,
right,
and, you know, what Trenton's future held, if that is what happened. But yeah, it does seem kind of unlikely that she would have been able to commit a murder and hide every piece of evidence that cleanly, when, if you believe that, you know, she did just stage this abduction and did it so poorly that police were on to her within, you know, hours, basically.
Right. Yeah.
But like those two things don't match up.
Yeah, but she did it, but she covered up the murder. So
yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Right. So if Trenton is still out there, and he very well could be, because there's no evidence really that he's not, other than the fact that he wasn't found, he would be 20 years old now. He could be getting ready to celebrate his 21st birthday this year and have no idea who he really is. While we don't have answers now, there's always hope that one day we will. Maybe someone who knows something will finally come forward. And maybe, just maybe, Trenton Duckett will come home. Trenton Duckett has been missing from Leesburg, Florida since August 27, 2006. He is of mixed Caucasian and Asian descent with brown hair and brown eyes. At the time of his disappearance, he was approximately 3 feet tall and weighed about 35 pounds. Trenton was 2 years old when he went missing. He would be 20 today. Anyone with any information about Trenton Duckett's disappearance is urged to call the Leesburg Police Department at 352-787-2121. You can see all the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.